the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Right, time we got started, I think. The bad news is, tonight's speaker is not turning up. That's though quite planned. That's the way we planned it. Because Tanya Marlowe, who is our special guest for In Conversation With tonight, is unable to be here. At the moment, she's suffering so badly from the disease she suffers with that she's only able to get out of the house for about 2 hours a week, if that, and then pushed by somebody in a wheelchair. Tanya is a young woman who has a child of six, a boy of six, and a husband who's a vicar in a city 38 miles from here, which we won't talk about. And she was perfectly healthy until just before she fell pregnant. She started having all sorts of weird glandular fevers, things like that, spells in bed with a cold that just wouldn't go away, all sorts of stuff, and nobody could diagnose what was going on. And then just as it was announced she was pregnant, she also found out she had ME. Now, if you don't know much about ME, the proper name of it, I can say this only once in an evening, is myalgic encephalomyelitis, and it's a neurological disease. Which has all kinds of effects on people. ME patients experience abnormally increased inflammation, oxidative stress, intramuscular acidosis after they do any exercise at all, and exercise can be a very bad thing for them. Exercise can result in abnormal gene and heat shock protein expression, whatever that means. I sound like a doctor, but I'm not. Decreased cerebral oxygenation, lowered mitochondrial ATP, and extended abnormal pH, which apparently all that's bad for you. And the trouble is, it's often confused by doctors with CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome. Now, if you've got CFS, well, there's no real pathological definition of what CFS is. There are 10 different definitions of it. And so ME falls under one of those definitions, but it's not the same thing. If you've got CFS, exercise is probably good for you. But if you've got ME, it's pretty bad. ME patients, well, most of us would get good effects from exercise, including increased energy, better sleep, decreased sensitivity to pain, all of that kind of thing. For ME patients, it's the opposite. They get increased fatigue, insomnia, higher levels of pain, other negative symptoms. So you can imagine that if you're going to have a baby, you get quite worried about, what's this going to do to me? And nobody seemed too interested. They felt, well, your body's going to do it for you anyway, so you don't need to worry too much about it. But after the birth of the baby, ME set in big time, and Tanya has never really been the same. So before this, she was a writer and a speaker, and she did all kinds of things with her husband. She was involved in the work of their parish down in Plymouth, and she did all kinds of different things. Now she can do very, very little. Despite that, she's built a big presence for herself at tanyamarlowe.com on the internet, writing some of the most sparkling and original articles you could imagine. And she's an ME activist. She's trying to help people who are in a much worse situation than she even is herself. And she's facing a bit of an uncertain future. Clearly, from what I've said, she's a Christian. So how do you cope with something like that when God seemingly takes away from you the future that you've been planning and that he seems to have been prodding you towards for many, many years? And what's going to happen to her? In 6% of cases, there can be complete recovery. 94% of cases, that does not happen. Some improvement can happen, although relapses can occur even after that. And what happens with most people is that they stagnate at a certain stage of disability. So she's got no idea what the future holds. About 30% of cases of ME are progressive and degenerative, and the degeneration of some organs can end in death. There's also a high suicide rate amongst ME sufferers because sometimes it's just pretty much impossible. You don't look that bad. You've got nothing obviously physically wrong with you. And so there can be tremendous intolerance that sufferers have to face. And all of this she's facing and she's writing about and she's trying to explain to other people. And she's also trying to explain why she hasn't given up on God just quite yet. So we thought, even if we can't get her here, it'd be great to bring her voice into this place. We're going to be ringing her up, and assuming she's okay, she'll answer your questions live over the phone later on this evening. So we'll be talking to her, and that means, of course, that if you can be thinking any questions you would like to ask about her illness, about her faith, about anything you want, really, then that would be great. Hi, Tanya. It's John Allen here from Belmont, and one or two other people as well. We'd like to ask you some questions. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's great.
Good. How are you feeling tonight?
Like the walls gently swaying, but otherwise I'm great.
Great. Okay, fine. Now, we've got two people wandering around with microphones here, so I'm going to ask if somebody's got a question that you'd like to kick us off with. Derek there, or Christine there, will come to you. Just raise your hand, and there's one in the back row straight away. We love the video. Thank you for that interview, Tanya.
Thank you for having me.
Hello, Tanya. What can we do to make doctors realise that ME is real and that there's a right and a wrong treatment?
Okay, Tanya, what can we do to make doctors realise that ME is real and there's a right and a wrong treatment?
I think a sign of holding them down and physically persuading them.
You're advocating violence here.
No, I'm not advocating violence. That would be a bad thing, I remember now. I think the short answer is I'm not sure. I think there is a problem with individuals, and if you can persuade one doctor, then that is, you know, part of the battle. But I also think there's need for change from the top down.
Right. So it's a case of spreading awareness at the bottom and changing policies at the top.
Yes, exactly. And if we could get the NICE guidelines changed, I would be a very happy woman.
That's the NICE guidelines. Would you like to explain what that is?
Those are the kind of NHS official guidelines. And at the moment, they advocate graded exercise. And then they haven't made any plans to change those.
Yeah, so that's pretty scandalous, really. Okay, thank you. Have we another question? There's one down here.
My question is, how do you respond when people say that you can't do something because of your illness? So if they have a knowledge of your illness and they sort of prejudged in their mind that that means you can't do some things, like how do you respond when people question your ability?
How do you respond when people question your ability? They know you're ill and they've already prejudged in their mind that you're not able to do certain things, which presumably that you can. Is that the implication of the question? Yeah. You can do these things, but they kind of patronise you and put you in a box. How do you respond?
So is the question when people say that they think I can do more than I can do or less than I can do?
They think you can do less, is that right? Yep, they think you can do less, and they try to stop you doing things that you can actually do.
Ah, okay. If it's friends, then I'll say, hi, I can actually do this, and then usually launch into an unwelcome explanation of what I can do and not do. If it's an official, I think as I was saying about the BA person, sometimes I don't have the words right at that moment, but I always find that it does cause a bit of a stir if you stand up from your wheelchair. People don't expect that. It can cause a lot of confusion in a Christian healing meeting. So that's one way to just alter people's perceptions.
Right.
I think often we think of disability as binary. We think it's either someone is completely disabled,
right,
or they're completely able-bodied. And there's a whole bunch of us in the middle,
okay,
who don't fit into either of those categories. So I think it's helpful to remind people to do away with their assumption.
That's really helpful. Thank you for that. And we have another question here.
How do you respond when people give you the kind of classic biblical comforts of God will do good things through this, or sometimes like he's teaching you something, or it's punishment for something.
How do you respond when you're given, when people give you the sort of classical biblical comforts of, oh, God is going to do something through this, or God must be teaching you something, or there was a third one, is that right? Oh, or this is a punishment for your evil life. Okay. How do you respond to those kinds of comments from well-meaning Christians?
The punishment one is a lot easier in that I can just go to Job or Jesus and compare myself with them, and that's a nice feeling to do that. I come off quite well. I think the harder thing is when people say, this is a lesson, what have you learned from it? Because there's a lot of truth in that. That's what makes it hard to hear. Because you can learn things through suffering, and that is a way of seeing blessing in the midst of suffering. But to reduce people's experience of suffering to an object lesson is to fail them.
That's interesting.
God has given us so many good things. You know, it's right that we have an instinct to love. It's right that we are appalled by death. These are the ways that God has created us. And so I often look back to the beginning in Eden, and I look forward to heaven and say, actually, what in my experience is leaning towards those things? Because however great the lesson I've learned through writing my experiences and finding meaning in this state of chronic illness, I would love to be able to dance in the kitchen with my kid.
Right.
And, you know, that's just something that we've got to hold alongside.
So you can't reduce the experience to one simple lesson. It's not just an object lesson, it's a whole life. And there are all sorts
of but I think it's hard to say that at the time to the person who is very forthrightly telling you that. And I would love to see other Christians speaking out against that a little.
I think there's something there we can take away and think about. That's great. Is there another question over here? Christine, yes.
Hi, Tanya. I just wonder if you could say something about the way in which you as a couple have been challenged by your ME and how it's helped working together, maybe. I'm trying to put words into your mouth, but I'm just interested to hear how that has worked out.
This is a question about your wonderful husband, John, and the way that you operate through this as a couple. How do you approach this whole business of the big change that's taken place in your life? Is that a fair representation of the question? Yep. Okay. So how do you cope with that as a couple together?
I think one of the things that I've really appreciated is John's refusal to blame me for my illness or disability. And I think as a carer, it can be really tempting to feel resentment. And somehow he has managed to avoid directing his anger and resentment at me and has dealt with it elsewhere.
And this is something you frequently see, is it, in cases like yours, that there can be a real resentment towards the person who is the sufferer?
Yes, I think often it can, you know, it can either make you or break you as a couple, because it depends how much you mean in sickness and in health. And I think few of us really have a concept of what that means when we make those vows. I think something that's really helped us as a couple has been looking at love languages, which is a concept by Gary Chapman. Before I got ill, we would spend lots of quality time together on days off. And since I've been ill, I've had to accept acts of service as a new love language. And we've had to find new ways of loving one another and communicating with one another. And I think as long as you're fighting to find those new ways of being, then you'll be all right.
I guess it must be more difficult keeping the communication open between you as well, is it? If you're not able to spend so much time together physically as you used to. Is that a strain?
Sorry, the line has gone a bit.
I'm sorry.
I can't hear what you're saying.
Okay. Just it must be difficult to keep communication between you at the same level when you're not able physically to spend so much time together and do the same things that you used to.
I'm really sorry, but the sound has just gone on your end. I'm wondering if there's a different line. You sound very muffled.
Right. Are you hearing anything?
Sorry.
No, it's okay, Tanya. Can you hear me now?
No.
Nope.
Well, I can hear you a bit indistinctly.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
If you can just pronounce really slowly. Sorry.
Okay. All right, let's leave that one and see if other people have questions out there, because I've asked lots. There's another question coming up now. Are you still with us, yeah?
Because there are so many wicked and evil people in the world, how did God allow Tanya to have this terrible illness?
Yes.
When she's such a lovely and a religious, believes in God, everything. And yet he allowed her to have this illness.
Okay, thank you. That's a very good question. Tanya, we're on theology now. Are you there? Okay.
Okay, yep, I can hear you.
So, you're a nice person. There are lots...
Thank you.
Hey, that wasn't me, that was the questioner. Anyway, she's saying that there are lots of evil people in the world. Why would God allow this to happen to you rather than one of them?
I think it depends on how we see sin and justice. So I describe sin as everything that is kind of wrong with the world and wrong with us. We're designed to live in harmony with each other and live in harmony with God, and we don't, and something has gone wrong. And so I see sin as sickness that has infected everything, including this world. And we don't see justice all the time in this lifetime. So if we're looking for justice now, we're not going to find it. And I also kind of see that in the way that Jesus was killed. That was not fair. It was a bad thing that happened to the very best of humans.
Right, so just to clarify that a little more, you're saying that what has happened to you is not directly inflicted by God, but it's part of the system that's gone into chaos in this world. Is that right?
Yes, it's kind of... I think of that verse that says, it rains on the righteous and the unrighteous. You know, there's blessing that comes for free to everyone. And there's also this horrible mixture of sickness and death and suffering and injustice. And we can't look for fairness in the way that people are afflicted. And part of my heart wails against that because it feels unjust. And I think we're right to feel that injustice. But it's also not the end of the story, because there will be a point where there is justice and where God does deal with the evil and does deal with the brokenness of our world and restore it.
That's really interesting. Thank you very much for that. Have we got a follow-up to that question? Or it might be on a different subject. It might be the same one. Yep, here's one.
Thinking of the book of Job, when I read the book of Job, I ask myself, did God afflict Job or did Satan afflict Job? And how do you see that? Do you think that Satan has afflicted you?
You mentioned the book of Job quite a bit tonight, Tanya, in the interview and elsewhere. And when you read the book of Job, is it God who's afflicting Job or is it Satan who's afflicting Job? And do you feel that what's happened to you has been inflicted by Satan? Thank you for that.
I think it's a really interesting distinction to make. And I think it's good to bring Satan into it. Because you're right to say that it was Satan who afflicted Job. And God allowed it, but it was who was bringing it in. So you've got a weird kind of messy paradox that the evil is not originating from God, but if you like, God is staying his hand. And in terms of what I feel, I think the interesting thing is when you read Job, Job feels like he is afflicted by God. He is afflicted by Satan, but the feeling is that he is afflicted by God. And for me, that was a really helpful realization that when suffering comes, it often feels like it is from the hand of God.
Right. So I guess that ties in too with the verse in the New Testament, doesn't it, that says, in everything that happens, God is at work for the good of those who love him, who are called according to his purpose. He doesn't necessarily send the evil, but he can allow it to happen, and he uses it for his own purposes.
That's a really great chapter on suffering and where God is in it. And I love the bit in that one chapter about the fact that we grow in suffering, and as we grow, God is groaning with us. God, the Holy Spirit, groans with us. And so I think that helps to adjust our image of God as a distant inflictor of suffering to be someone who is groaning alongside us.
That's helpful. I think we have time for two, possibly three questions, depending. But we've got one over here. Yes?
Hi, yeah. How do you cope with the impact of your illness has had on your relationship with your child?
How do you cope with the impact that your illness has had on your relationship with your child?
I think this has been something we've just had to learn as we've gone along. For me, the way I keep sane with it is by having quality time. And John is really kind in that I get to read the stories, which I think is the best job. And I can go out of the house maybe twice a month. So I prioritize things like his harvest festival. So I can show him in those ways that I love him. And I have played to my strengths, so he knows a lot of the time that I'm limited to bed, so I can't play ball games with him, but I'm really good at making up stories, and I'm really good at playing baby when he's a daddy. So I basically stick to that.
You did something for his birthday party just recently, didn't you? Luna?
Sorry, you've gone muffled again.
Sorry. If I just say Luna, that was for his birthday party, wasn't it?
Oh, you're talking about the birthday party I did for him.
Do you want to tell us about that?
I rocked at that. It was a space party. So I wore a silver dress and called myself Luna and claimed to be a sprite from the moon. And I discovered that if you give some kids some facts about space, like Jupiter's the biggest planet, and then mix it up with complete fiction. Like, if you travel to the center of the red spot in Jupiter, it's full of fruit juice and you can lick it. Then it really messes with their heads and they really like you.
That's great. Thank you, Tanya. I think we've got time for maybe just one more. Christine, you're pointing here. Or Derek, have you got any more on your side that we've not got? No, that's fine. Right, this side's been absolutely brilliant. Right, one last one from...
I feel the pressure now. The question is, Tanya, how has your illness affected your relationships with the people that are close around you? Mm. And have you seen an impact of that on their faith as well?
Tanya, has your illness impacted your relationships with the people around you, and have you seen any impact on their personal faith as a result of that as well?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question more slowly?
Okay, has your illness had any impact on the relationships that you have with people around you? I guess we're talking about friends, family, people like that, are we? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And have you seen any change in their attitude to Christian faith or whatever as a result of that?
So have my illness impacted people around me, and has their attitude changed?
Has that made them see God in any different light? Has that impacted their own faith in God or lack of it?
I'm sorry, I've lost that bit. Can you repeat that bit?
Okay. Has it had any impact on the way that they see God or experience faith or anything like that?
I have a weird situation in that I am friends with a lot of people online who tell me a lot about their life. And then I have kind of normal friends who tell me a normal amount about their life. So in terms of my family relationships and friend relationships, I think they've just kind of continued in their own faith and have worked out their way. But where I've seen it really important to speak out about my experience has been others on the same journey as me, or a similar journey, who have got in touch via the blog and have been able to share and work through some of those really difficult experiences that very few people talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's where I see potentially my story influencing other people's faith. I haven't yet heard of anyone who has stopped believing because of me.
Right.
So I'm going to call that a win.
That's great. Well, Tanya, that's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you very much. I think those questions and answers have really added to the video enormously. Is there any one thing that you would like to say that we've not covered in any of this stuff before we finish, or should we just say goodnight?
I think one of the things that has been on my mind today is that verse from Matthew where Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And for ages, I looked at that verse and thought, why is it good to be yoked to God? But seeing actually, rather than a prison, which is how it can often feel, to be wrestling with faith in the midst of suffering, that Jesus having a yoke alongside us means that actually he's carrying some of that weight. And I'm still trying to work out what that means. But I really hang on to that as a precious promise. And so I think that's what I'd like to leave you wonderful people with. And I'm very, very grateful to you for having me and accommodating me in this way.
Tanya, we're so grateful for all you've done for us. That's been a fantastic evening you've given us, and we'd just like to say thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
I guess you heard the applause?
I did, thank you.
Well, that's what they think of you in Exeter. I'll say goodnight. Bye, Tanya.
Okay, bye.
Bye. If those issues have raised any interest in you, you want to discuss them further, then do please hang around and chat, by all means. Go on to tanyamarlow.com, take the booklets I've spoken about, come back on Tuesday. Be brilliant. Thank you for being here. We couldn't have done it without you. Good night and God bless.